Welcome to another episode of Herb Chirp, a podcast by Albertans, about Albertans, but for all Herpers. I'm Erica Ensign.
I'm Annette Weirstra.
And I'm Kirsten Gorick.
And we are back, finally, and officially.
Yay!
Woo! Yes, we are here to talk about episode 401, the first episode of season 4 of Winona Earp, On the Road Again. It aired for the first time a while back, but I don't know if you guys have noticed, but there's a global pandemic, and it's made things hard all around. And it took a little while to get everybody on the same page. Annette and I had been watching. Kirsten had not been watching. So you guys, we are recreating season one.
Season one and two.
And two. Yes, that's true.
We're kicking it old school just for you guys.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Kirsten, this is all new to Kirsten. So I just, like, the first thing that I just really have to know right now is, how do you feel?
It's amazing. It's been almost, I think, 3 years since I've seen a new episode of Winona Earp, which feels bananas. And I rewatched the finale from season 3 yesterday in preparation. And it was just like, oh, I missed our little shit show. And I just, like, from the first second of this episode, I was like, yes, I am home. I am in snowy Calgary, which really actually isn't my home, but it feels like my home when I watch this show. And I loved it. It was so needed. It was so much joy.
This is great. And I do have to tell all of our listeners that we are seeing each other's faces, at least. We are doing this on Zoom. We're actually live streaming it. So if you want to go back and watch us doing it with our faces, it'll be on YouTube. But it's not quite the same as being all in the same room, unfortunately. Nope. But at least I get to see the joy on your face and how excited you are. That is a big important thing when we're recording this podcast, for me anyway.
I think so.
But in the hand claps. We missed the like sitting together in the couch in the same room watching it, which is
yeah. As we were watching, we have a little private Slack channel that's just us for, like, planning the show and things, and we were giving reactions and stuff back and forth in there, which is nice, but it's not the same as hearing Kirsten go, "What the fuck?"
which I did a lot of.
Yes. I actually wish I had counted how many fucks they said, because I feel like
you, like, did more.
So many. Normally they're very, like, careful about their fucks, and they dole them out over the season, and I feel like, I hope there are more to come, but I feel like they used a lot in this first episode.
I wonder if they had, like, you know, there's a, you can have so many fucks in a season, and if that's the case, they may have gone through a lot of them. You know, like, you're budgeting for, like, your actual budget. You have, you know, you can pay this much money for sets and this much money for actors, and you have this many fucks, and, like, there's just a line item,
and they're giving us all their fucks.
And I feel like
all at the once.
This, of all of the times, like, this is a really good place to use those, because as your shirt points out, Annette, nevertheless, we persisted. Win 4, numeral 4, Winona shirt points out, it was a lot to make sure that we had this season. Like, thank you, Herpers, because you guys, we all worked our little tails off. Asses, I can swear on this podcast.
Yes, so. Yes, we can.
Fuck yeah, we can.
I'm not used to that. But yeah, we worked our asses off to make sure that that happened. And we're not going to get into how hard we're working right now to get another season, but that is also a chore for us. But I think it felt like it was extra celebratory in this episode to have all of those fucks, because it's like there's so much emotion that was just splashed out onto the screen. And that's the way a lot of people on, you know, a lot of the characters on this show express that strong feelings is with the F word.
But there was also like the meta text that was like a tribute to that time period. And like when Nedley says, it feels like I've been waiting here for two, or I've been standing here for 2 years. It's like, same, Nedley, same. So,
And
the don't fuck with our family.
Yes. There were so many lines where I just wanted punch the air, because I was like, yep, that is exactly how I feel about this. So, yeah, I will say that, like, even though I had already seen this episode, when the cold open finished and it went into the theme song, which I will just still say is one of the greatest theme songs in all of television history. It's so good. I got weepy. It was just like, I was all emotional all over again. It's like, we did it. It's back. I'm so excited. And it also helped that I knew that Kirsten was watching it for the first time. So, like, it was extra feels.
I definitely got chills at one point. I think it was the nobody fucks with our family line. And it was like, I just had these flashbacks to this crazy fight that we did to win season 4 and the polite no chill and all that stuff. And it just felt, yeah, like a huge, huge celebration in the middle of like the craziest shit storm of a premiere.
Yep.
Well, and then also when we finally, by the time we finally got to watch 401 for the first time, we're already well into a pandemic, which then was delaying the second half, and they had to like cut short filming. And so the whole thing of this series, it's like season 4, it's like it's been an uphill battle to get it, not just from the getting them to do the season, but then them having to film it and everything. So, you know, it's sort of magical.
It really is. I feel like everything good is a little bit magical right now. And although like this episode, there's a lot of magical stuff. Most of it was not good. So let's dive into talking about this right
now.
The actual
episode.
Yeah. So there's a lot. And, you know, we're not like a recap podcast. We don't necessarily go through it beat by beat. So, Kirsten, like, what's one thing about this episode that really like stood out to you that you want to talk about?
Who the hell tasered Jer-Bear? I want names. We didn't see him other than that. I'm very concerned. I was actually quite shocked that it showed him carving Valdez into the staircase, because I don't know why, but my brain assumed Valdez was someone like a potential villain who had left and taken them, and that was like her calling card. And so to see him leave it as a clue instead, and the whole like, I keep knives in my pen drawer, and yeah. I'm a demon hunter, not a Shakespeare. Like, that whole thing was just so, brought me so much joy.
So much. It's like when people call a vampire a Dracula, like Jason, the head of our Incomparable Network, he does that on purpose because he knows it annoys some people. And he thinks this is hilarious. So you refer to a vampire as a Dracula, you refer to a writer as a Shakespeare.
A Shakespeare.
So there were so many great turns of phrase in this. And I mean, there always are in Wynonna Earp, but I think because it had been so long since, you know, we'd had new turns of phrase, that they just, I don't know, for me, they packed an extra punch. Or maybe there is a statistician out there who could go through and write like the number of good one-liners in every single episode and see if it was actually more in this episode, because I don't know if it was or if it just felt like it was, because they were thick on the ground, very thick.
Oh, for sure. Like, I think I'd like to go back and just watch it again, because I feel like the pace was so intense and fun that I feel like I definitely missed little jabs, and like, it was just so delightful.
I did have the captions on. We watch pretty much everything with closed captioning on. I'm old and I've been to a lot of rock concerts. And I feel like I don't hear as well as I should. So it was extra helpful, because I feel like this time, I think the first time we watched it, there were no subtitles, because I think we were watching it live on CT Sci-Fi. Whoa, it's a terrible name for a network. Just space was cool. CT Sci-Fi. CTV Sci-Fi sounds very corporate. But I think for some reason we didn't have any captions. So this time I feel like I actually caught more of it too, which was great, because one of the things that I have always loved the most about this show is the writing. It is just like top notch always. So yeah, I remember, it's interesting because the first time I watched it, I was just so, like, I had no idea what was happening through the whole thing. And I don't always deal super well with that. So I feel like I liked it a lot better the second time through, in part because I was a little more relaxed about everything, just because I kind of understood it a little bit better. So I don't know, Kirsten, if you revel in the WTF-ness or if you are kind of like, I need to know what's going on. I definitely recommend a rewatch either right away or after you've seen more episodes, or both.
I do kind of revel in it. I come to expect it from this show in particular. And so I'm often prepared for it. And it's just sort of like, you get on that train and you just like go where Emily tells you to go and you enjoy the ride. And that is what I was doing.
Speaking of trains,
don't jump off because you might get electrocuted.
Don't touch that door.
There was so much good directing in this episode, which is another thing about this show that I love so much, is like, you know, it's, I have been watching a lot of Netflix shows and BBC shows and stuff that are, it's not, it's written for, you know, an hour of time or 50 minutes mm-hmm. of time or whatever. Whereas this is a show that is still written for commercial television and has to have commercial breaks. And I know some people get annoyed by that, but I like it as a structure because you are writing to have a cliffhanger every, you know, 7 minutes or whatever it works out to be. And I thought that this was really masterfully done in a bunch of places. And one was on the train where we have Nicole waking up on the train being like, holy shit, this is not the homestead. I'm going to kill you, Winona, and going for the door. And then suddenly an unseen assailant grabs her and pulls her away and boom, we cut to black for a commercial break. And then it comes back later and we find out, oh my God, it was Kate. Like there were a whole bunch of places where the writing and the direction, I thought, dovetailed mm-hmm. really well to make that work. Wasn't there an amazing like spinny dissolve later?
The scene, if you've watched the extras, which you should because they're awesome.
I haven't yet.
But they have the that scene where it flashes between Nedley and Winona, and then it goes to Jeremy and then back to Nedley and Winona. That's a single shot. So they like change the lighting, a flip, and they have to like walk in and out like and set up really quickly. And so they have them sort of showing how they shot that. And it's like kind of amazing.
Whoa. I was so glad you pointed that out because it was really cool to see it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And appreciate it in the moment.
Oh my God. I just, this show, like what a fucking great show it is. I'm really emotional right now. Were there some Alberta-isms? Like that is our thing here on Herb Trip. If this is your first time listening to Herb Trip, welcome. One of the things that we like to do since we all live in Alberta is think about things that are legit and real and local, and this show does such a great job of them. So, Kirsten, you already mentioned the snow.
I did mention the snow. There was a building that Nicole and Winona pulled up to when they were in, I forget the name of the small town.
Monument.
And they pulled up and it was the sort of abandoned, I think, Black Badge site.
Yeah.
And that building, that brick, just the look of it was like, oh, that is so Alberta. Like I've seen buildings like that mm-hmm. in so many cities, like smaller cities and towns in Alberta, and it felt very much like home for me.
It is an architectural style that, like Stephen was saying, he's like, is that, he thought it might actually be one of the newspaper buildings in Calgary from one of the newspapers that got closed down.
Oh, that's entirely possible.
Yeah. So that could very well be it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then also like every shot in the garden, like, and I recognize, okay, the garden is not supposed to be in purgatory in the Ghost River Triangle. It's a different place, but obviously they shot it in, mm-hmm. you know, in the Calgary area because that's where they shoot the show. And yeah. And it just like, it is beautiful and desolate and lovely.
Haunting.
And yeah. And yet it also, like you said, Kirsten, it made me feel like home. It was just like, oh.
It's like, that's what our gardens look like right now. That uh-huh. is legitimate.
That crunch of the snow. It's still one of my favorite things.
Yes.
It's one of the ways you can always tell if it's real snow or not.
Mm-hmm. You can't fake that. Like
mm-hmm. scene with Nedley and Winona where they're traipsing through the woods at the beginning to get back to the staircase. Mm-hmm. That whole thing was so beautiful and just so authentically like outdoors, mm-hmm. crunching through the snow, and then like the face plant into the snow. Those stairs need railings. That is a fall hazard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything about that scene I thought was amazing. Like it was like the whole cold opening, the whole beginning was just a wonderful way to pull us back into this show. Everything from like the line that you already mentioned about, you know, Nedley saying, I feel like I've been standing here for 2 years, to using the F-bomb like almost immediately, to choosing a weapon at the very beginning and landing on a flask and drinking out of it. Like it was just like all these little tiny character beats and directing beats, like everything was moving so fast. It really felt like coming back to the show. And then, you know, traipsing through the woods, Winona walking up the stairs and saying Nedley being like, still not looking at your ass. Like it was just like all of these. Yeah, Emily's just a master at creating character with the tiniest bit of dialogue or side eye or, you know, any of that kind of stuff. It's so good.
Well, and I feel like they really propelled the story forward. Even like in the middle of all the crazy, like mm-hmm. we have Nicole lost and then found and then lost again. Mm-hmm. And we learn about all this history with Black Badge and dolls comes up and we all miss dolls. Oh. And mm-hmm. I forgot that Doc was a fucking vampire and I hate that. So like,
yep.
Want to wipe that from my memory again. And, you know, you see that guy, the poor cut up gentleman who we think might have worked for Black Badge before he like cut off his own head. Like, my God, I forgot this show can be so gory sometimes. Yeah, like kind of gross.
And so much blood.
Just like really quite shocking. And I love those gasp moments. I'm a person who gasps. I get it from my mother if she's listening. Hi, Mom. and so like I always count a good episode of TV is like when I get a couple of those in. And that scene, it got me good.
This is what I miss about watching in person.
Yeah. One of the things that got me the first time I watched it was surprisingly not the head cutting off, not like the garden. It was the zombies. I was like, oh shit, she's bringing zombies in now. That's amazing. I love zombies. I think they're hilarious. But it's just like last year they brought in the vampires. This year we brought in zombies. And again, kind of take them in a little different direction or whatever. But it was just really fun just seeing zombies. So then I was just like, I can't wait till Kirsten sees the zombies because I know she doesn't like them.
I don't care for zombies.
No, you don't.
I'm not a big fan of zombies, but I like when there are science zombies.
Yeah.
like they seem legitimate zombies, if that makes sense. Like, I'm like, okay, I respect the zombie. Mm-hmm.
It was created by.
You won't tell her that the whole rest of the show is just all like just zombie.
It's
hunting.
A zombie movie.
Well, Rachel, yeah. Who's a new character, was like carrying a bat. And I don't watch The Walking Dead, but I know there's a character who has like a spiked bat because I've seen photos in pop culture. And so once the zombie showed up and she was like using the bat like a badass, I was like, oh, here we go. Mm-hmm. This is what's happening. Like, Erica, you mentioned the slow motion badass fight sequences.
Yeah.
Never get
with that
old.
Music.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm a sucker for any kind of, you know, fight scene set to music where we get some decent slow-mo, and I will never, ever, ever get tired of watching Wynonna Earp strutting along in slow-mo and just tossing, you know, beaver blasters or whatever just over her shoulder.
Like, when she said she had a full bra, it didn't occur to me that she meant, like, it was literally full of explosives.
So good.
No, they were just... full of boobs, you know?
Well, you know, my bra's full of my boobs. I don't got any explosives in here that I'm aware of.
Yep. And I mean, and it's like, that's the kind of line where I think it will age pretty well because you don't need to know what like cultural touchstone it's pulling from. Like, it's that's Friday Night Lights. Is that what that's from?
It is.
Which I haven't seen, but I know.
I didn't know that. I just thought that was funny.
See? Exactly.
Oh, see, and I watched that show, so I knew immediately. I actually think remember it from the trailer, possibly.
And what's
when
the
they
actual,
released a trailer?
What's the actual line? Like, full hearts?
Clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose.
Right. So, whatever her line was, which ended full bra, can't lose. I was just like, yes. Yes. So, I'm happy, Annette. Thank you for giving me proof that line works.
I was like, that was a sports thing. I don't watch sports things.
Well, sort of sports. It's drama. But
it still had sports in it. So.
That's true. Like, there was some football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very good. And I thought that it was interesting because Rachel, I cannot remember the actress who plays Rachel, but she sings the national anthem for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
That's right.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And I, like, we watched a Leafs game, was it last night or the night before? I can't remember. And, you know, she's not, like, in the building with them now because global pandemic. But they had her on camera. And, like, she was wearing this amazing, like, I don't know if it was a dress because she was, I think, just, like, chest up, but it had like these poofy kind of like purpley pink gauzy like sleeves. Yeah. Like, she looked like a princess, and I was like, oh my God, Rachel looks so amazing. Very different
that.
Look from on the show where she's, you know, living in an abandoned building and eating out of trash bins. But
and also a very different look for most guys who sing the anthem at hockey games.
Yeah,
like, I can't think of a lot of, well, I don't watch every game, but like, they wear suits or like jerseys. Mm-hmm. I just love that she was rocking something different.
She really was. Yeah, it was great. Like, I'm super duper not a Maple Leafs fan at all because we're Oilers fans here, except for Annette, who just doesn't care.
No, well, I'm still an Oilers fan. I don't, even if I don't watch hockey.
Yeah, even Annette
I'm
knows
like
we
born
don't cheer
and
for the Leafs.
Raised here, so like, I'm not cheering for the Leafs.
Which definitely makes us like not technically Ghost River Triangle people, because that would they would probably be Flames fans, let's face it. Or
we just don't talk about that.
Or possibly Maple Leafs fans, just because there are a lot of fans of the Maple Leafs and the Habs like all over the country, because yeah, they've been around forever.
Original, well, whatever, the original six?
The original, the arbitrary six. Because only two of those teams actually existed at the beginning of the NHL. And that's the two.
All I know is I'm a Kraken fan now, so.
Mm. Yeah, see, excellent. Taking a little sidebar into hockey territory is a very Alberta thing, so I'm not going to apologize.
True. I don't even watch hockey, and I still...
I would like to muse if Rachel sings... Does this mean we get a musical episode this season?
Obviously. She did, side note, release a video at Christmas time with her and Dominic singing together, I believe.
Oh my God.
And
right,
it's like
Dom
really
sings
nice.
Too. Can
yeah,
we just
so
make this happen, please?
So I will check and see for you if it is. I think it's just a Christmas singing thing. And no spoilers. So I will look it up for you and then send it to you.
Need
so
to
you
vet
can
it.
Go, yeah, we can find it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is the tricky part of the podcast that I had kind of forgotten about since we haven't had to worry about it for a while, is like, okay, what can I say and how can I say it to talk about the things that happened in this episode without giving any clues or spoilers to Kirsten, who hasn't seen anything beyond this? But I do think that plot-wise, this was a really solid introduction, because you get to see all the characters. Admittedly, Jeremy is not in there for very long. But everybody sort of pops back up and makes an appearance, and you kind of figure out where they are in, you know, like where the chess pieces all are on the board.
Yeah,
we've set them up. We've moved a couple of them, you know, by the end of the episode a little bit. But yeah, do you want to take any guesses on where things are going or what stuff means, Kirsten? Or like, you don't
have
to.
You're a good guesser. You're a very good guesser.
I am a good guesser, but like, I don't trust my guesses with this show. I can guess other shows. This one is just bananas. Yeah, I don't know. I will say I was really, really pleased that Mercedes was back. When I saw Danny Kine's name in the credits as we started the episode, I was like, oh yeah. I was like, and her costumes are always just these really bright, colorful, fun pieces of candy that I enjoy looking at. I just have so many questions, because Kate's still on the train, and where are Jeremy and Robin? And now Nicole is presumably naked in the garden.
Wearing a smile.
Making Doc feel very uncomfortable, I'm sure.
He did not look very uncomfortable. I'm going to say he looked like he was pretty okay with it.
I think he's a little hungry, and I'm kind of concerned, actually, if I'm being honest.
Fair point. Very fair point.
So, yeah, I think the idea that in this very first episode, they have already found another door into the garden is so fascinating. And so I'm really interested to see how that plays in going forward, because the easy thing to do would just be to keep them separated, right? And have that tension and be like, two different worlds, never the twain shall meet for like four episodes or whatever. But what I love about this show is that it moves at such a pace that they're not afraid to change the rules right away and be like, no, you know what? We're just going to throw Nicole into the garden because that's fun. And we're just going to see what's going to happen. So yeah, I'm just really excited to be back in it. And yeah.
I just want the like extra sideshow thing where we get more of the Mercedes and Kate as roommates that is alluded to, but we don't get, because at the end of the season, I was like, right, I remember we just wanted them as roommates and we wanted to see them interact, and they've alluded to that, but have not actually given us anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of the scene with Mercedes when they're back at the house and she throws a knife for the first time and almost goes
right on it. I was like, that was excellent.
So excited about it.
I would be too.
I friggin' adored the scene with the maxi pads. Every bit of that, from like the point that, first of all, Winona is like digging around and she's like, we have no Bactine, we have no first aid kit, no anything. And I'm thinking like, oh my God, you're demon hunters. Why do you not have like a fully stocked first aid kit? And then I remember, oh yeah, it's the herbs. But like, I feel like
they use whiskey as a disinfectant. Uh-huh.
I feel like at some point, like, you know, maybe Waverly, maybe in the future, assuming things come all back together and they have a happily ever after, will make sure that they have a fully stocked kit, because that's something I would not expect Winona ever to do. But yeah, so they don't have anything. And then the fact that Nedley finds maxi pads and then just uses them with absolutely like no embarrassment or shame. And it, like, just the conversation between him and Winona about it, and how he's just like, that's really sexist. And he points out, you know, his daughter had her period for the first time when she was 11. It's like, how many conversations do we get on a television show that's like a badass zombie demon show about menstruation? Like, on this show, multiple, but like, it makes me so happy every time.
Well, and you're seeing her dab the maxi pad on her face.
And
like, when she's got, like, later on, she's just dabbing it on her face. And
she's got a nosebleed.
I have been seeing,
she got punched in the nose.
Yeah.
Rightfully so.
So, but I have seen a little more lately where we're seeing period blood in shows, which, you know, I'm like, that's super cool because it's so normal for a lot of us that why we should be just normalizing it on TV.
I agree. And also, just speaking of that scene, I literally punched the air, I think both times I watched this episode, when Nicole punches Winona in the face, because she 150% deserved that.
Oh,
you
that
don't
and more.
Drug your friends. I will not drug you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks.
I make that pledge to you guys as well.
So do I.
I mean, unless you ask really nicely.
Well, yeah, that's maybe a different story.
For a roof beer?
For a roof beer. I don't think I can supply that. Alcohol is a drug. I will ply you with that once we can get back together in the real world again.
It's been so
someday.
Long.
Oh, someday.
I think one of the things I like about this episode is the minimalist sets, which is practical from a production standpoint. And like, when you go in that building inside in the garden, and it's just basically like a warehouse with some stairs and blocks and stuff. And even in the garden, it's just like these like monuments that are sort of set up. And I find them really effective, but also like good strategy for keeping your budget. And like, there's a lot of lighting techniques in the building with, like, you were calling it a disco.
Like, it's a creepy, Erica, like, demon disco or something.
Yeah, demon disco.
I mean, I know it's supposed to be the Garden of Eden, but, like, outside you have all of the basically the wasteland of snow. And then inside, yeah, it's just this, you know, sterile is not the right word because it's all concrete, but just minimalist, as you said, you know, kind of brutalist architecture. Yeah. And it's just,
which is
like,
also prevalent here.
And it's a nice sort of like contrast with what you expect the Garden of Eden to be. Like, we have subverted many expectations. Not surprisingly, like, I don't think anybody expected it to be a beautiful, like, you know, actual Garden of Eden kind of Garden of Eden, because we knew something was wrong. But this is far, just like, as far as you can get from what I would have thought. Although we did end up with a tree, because there was, after Waverly slices into her angel-y arms or hand and gives the angel blood.
The good stuff, as she calls it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, uh-oh, what have you done, as Doc says, because now there's a tree growing. And then there are these books. And which, like, what they, the camera, of course, pans away before you get to see what she actually picked up. So, Kirsten, do you have any idea of what book she picked up and put in that
handy satchel? Well, I feel like her name was on one of the books, and knowing Waverly and not knowing what the books mean, like, I would assume she picked up her own, just because if you don't know what the books are going to do, you shouldn't pick someone else's book. That's what I would do anyways. I would not touch your guys' books. I just wouldn't do it.
Thank
Those are your books. They have your name on them.
So, they literally have
literally has your name on it. So I'm assuming, like, that's what I would assume, is that she picked up her own. Although I tried to see, it seemed like her last name was a weird
Gibson.
Well, it said Gibson.
It's Gibson. Okay. I was like, that's not Earp. That's something else. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It implies, so, I think, because we now know her dad isn't.
Isn't actually,
yeah, like, do angels have last names? Like,
that's her mom's last name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I guess so.
I don't know. And I mean, maybe she didn't pick up anyone's book. Maybe she left them all. Maybe she didn't make a choice. I don't know. Mm. But it is very ominous. The choose one and choose wisely. It's like, okay, no pressure.
Yikes.
I did appreciate the fact that there was a handy satchel, like, just sitting there. Perfectly sized for one of those books, like right underneath. Like, here you
just
go.
One of them, not
yeah,
four.
It's a magical satchel that only holds.
I don't
one.
Know.
You can't, like, shove all four of them.
I've
in
shoved
there.
A lot of books into a lot of bags mm-hmm. over my years. I bet I probably like, all of a them. Bunch of them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anything else that you guys want to touch on about this episode?
Well, without spoiling anything, I can see how it's laying so much groundwork, mm-hmm. And opening a lot of doors, which I like because. It just feels like we still don't know anything of what's going to happen, or even like knowing where it ends up. You don't like, it's just, yeah, it's just so interesting to see how they lay that out. Because mm-hmm. I haven't watched it since the original time. I've kind of avoided watching it too much so that we wouldn't be too far Same. Ahead of Kirsten.
Yep.
So yeah, so it's like, oh, this is the first time I've watched it since we've finished the whole season. Like, okay, I see what's happening here and I see what's not happening and everything. And it's just, yeah, I like it. It's tight.
It really is.
And soon. Yeah.
We don't know for sure if we're going to be able to get through all of season 4A before season 4B starts rolling out. We don't have any particular schedule because I don't know if you've heard, but there's a global pandemic going on. And I'm just going to keep saying that. Mm-hmm. it's actually in our real everyday lives, Steven does that all the time, our Cracker Jack producer. He says, like, early on in the pandemic, he said, you know, when people are like looking back on the past, if they're making TV shows or books about this time, people are going to be like in those works of fiction are going to be saying stuff like, during this global pandemic, blah, 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 unnaturally, because they're trying to like remind people of the far future that there was a global pandemic yeah. going on. So he was yeah. like, I want to make it so that that's real. And so that those people in those fictional books in the future are not saying something that's unrealistic. So he very often will refer to the fact that there is currently a global pandemic. And that has seeped in and I've picked up on that, too. So
yes, go ahead, Annette.
I was like, I feel like I do the same thing though, because it's like this reminder of, oh right, everything is just that much harder. Also, I'll say things like COVID just makes everything harder. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. my mantra.
Yeah,
everything's harder.
And when people ask me how I am, I'm like, I'm good, but like I'm pandemic good, which is not like mm-hmm. my normal level of good. It is a lesser shitty. Version of good because mm-hmm. the pandemic sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like just a little PSA for our listeners, like we are not trying to put too much on ourselves in terms of getting shit done. So like before the pandemic, we hustled our butts to try to like get things done in time for mm-hmm. newer episodes. And like, you know, there was a chunk of time where we were like every freaking week, like, you know, doing, you know, two or three episodes.
Two or three.
And,
yeah.
Oh yeah. It was intense. Yep. It was fun.
And
it was intense.
It was, yeah, it was great. And that's the kind of thing that we all realized, no, like we cannot put that on ourselves now because just getting through life is tough. So for all of you out there, whatever you're doing, whatever you're getting done, whatever you're mm-hmm. managing, it's enough. Good for you for hanging in there and just, you know, getting through the day. Because honestly, that's a victory.
Yeah, we miss you guys.
Mm-hmm. We totally, totally do. So no promises on when the next episode will be. No promises on if we're going to try live streaming again. No promises on anything. That is the new Earp Chirp promise.
We promise.
We make no
that we
promises.
We will promise nothing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I guess that's it. We look forward to talking to you guys again next time. I look forward to talking to you two again about the next episode because mm-hmm. I'm really excited yeah. to see this play out again. And
maybe
watch
we'll
Kirsten's
just
reaction.
Be excited and it'll happen. Who knows?
Yep. All right. Now the bit that is really difficult on the internet. We have discovered that closing out the podcast in person, it's a cinch. Like we got it down real quick. Mm-hmm. Closing out the podcast, on Zoom is impossible because we are not like, there's no such thing as in sync because everything's off a little bit because of the internet. So we are just going to do it, and it's going to sound weird to anybody who's listening to the live stream, but our crackerjack producer, Steven, is going to fix it. So if you're listening to this podcast as it drops in your feed, you're not going to have any idea how silly we sound right now. As we say,
lights out, bitch.